The following is a production of Omnis.tv.
Tonight's show, we welcome back music artist Rob Everest. Also, I'll be covering Major League Baseball, the top movies at the box office, Smashing Pumpkins' new tour, and the unsigned NFL preview. All that and much, much more tonight, only on Unsigned. Hey everyone, how's it going out there? It's a Tuesday night, and it is an unsigned podcast coming at you. This is our 31st show. Unbelievable, we've been going at it for a little while now. Huge, massive show for you tonight. The show is so big tonight that it makes the national debt look small. That's how big the show is tonight. Now, we're going to get Rob Everest on here in just a moment. Again, we got NFL preview. We're going to be talking NCAA football, the University of Miami, and the sanctions that have happened in the last week or so, or the pending sanctions, I should say. Hopefully everybody had a good week. The earthquake on the East Coast, weather's been kind of crazy out there as well. So hopefully we have any listeners in the East Coast area. Hopefully everyone is safe and sound of the 5+ Richter scale earthquake today. I actually had to make a very long journey to Ohio and back Sunday. Gosh, you never want to have to do 12 hours of driving in one day. That's just, that goes without saying. That's my FYI to you. But I'll tell you what, we're going to go ahead and bring Rob Everest on. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls of all ages, I welcome to you now, hailing from Green Bay, Wisconsin, the man who is climbing the mountain of country music, Mr. Robert Everest. Robert, my man, how you doing?
Dude, I feel like I should be giving you my hack jar Jim Duggan impersonation right now.
Hey,
let me tell you about music. How's life, guys? Are you having a good one or what?
Yeah, man, everything's good, man. No, you've been really busy. I know the album, just came out last month, and we had you on the show. It was just about to come out last time we had you on. Again, welcome back. Love to have you on as always. How's the album? Anytime, dude. How's the album? It's been out about a month now. You did the Vet Rock show in Atlanta, which we'll get to tonight as well. So far, since the album's been out, how's it been perceived as of yet for you?
Really, really positively received. I've got, it's kind of funny. You've got all kinds of input from all kinds of people, but for the most part, it's been really good. That's been nice. And since this all came out, I've been having to run the roads a lot. So that's also good. It means I'm doing my job and climbing that mountain, like you said. I love that.
Cool, man. Well, I know, last time we had you on, we did a really, extensive interview. We did some outtakes, so some things that weren't even on the album. I kind of put you on the spot. I'm not going to do that to you tonight, but, let's get into the single that we're going to play tonight, and it's the debut of the single off the album, Roots of the Mountain. The song is titled Downtown. Give us a little little headway into that song tonight.
The long and short of it is like this. I'm at a writer's night a while back here, and this kid from London shows up and does the whole, listen, mate, I really, really rock it, and I want to play some music with some people here in Nashville. Could you write with me? And so everybody else starts walking away, and I looked at him and said, listen, man, what's your name? And it's Simon Caviani. And we meet up the next day, and he just lays down this tasty groove, and it was just so cool. So I wrote the lyrics and the melody to this song. The idea is going to take this party downtown, and the reason we went with that is I'm hearing all these songs on the radio about, I'm going to party in a cornfield, and I love getting down in the Georgia clay, and we're going to do it down by the riverside and all that stuff. And I remember being a kid growing up on the farm, and all we wanted to do was steal mom's car and head into the city. We wanted to party. We wanted to go do something. We were sick of Podunk. So that's what this song's about.
Very cool, man. Well, and this is the first single off the album, is that right?
Yes, it is. Yep.
Gotcha. Well, I tell you what, let's go ahead and let's get into the song right now. We'll debut the song Downtown from Rob Everest off the album Roots of the Mountain. Only here on Unsigned, this is Downtown. Rob Everest in Downtown here on the Unsigned Podcast. Very, very good track, Robert. I really dig that tune. It is groovy. The album is well produced. The song is well produced. You got to be happy with the product on a debut album to have this type of quality, man.
Oh, man, I tell you what. That's funny. Nashville can be brutal. You can make a lot of mistakes and get took. There's a lot of good people, and there's also some bad ones. But, you know, it's funny. I'm so glad that I wasn't one of those writers that walked away from signing when he brought that idea. You know, it was at the right time for me. So that was great. Yeah, I'm real proud of it.
Yeah, man, I really like it. Everything I've heard off the album, you know, from, you know, when we first had our first interview and even when I first met you, you know, I really like everything you've done. I think your writing style is great. And I think it's really refreshing to hear the type of music you're putting out compared to, you know, at least in my opinion, some of the things you hear in Nashville now. Not all of it's bad, don't get me wrong, but there are some things out there and I go, ugh, you know, but that's neither here nor there now. You know, we talked about the Vet Rock show down in Atlanta you had, I believe, in July. Tell us about that and how that show went off for you.
Yeah, that went off in late July now. Been a couple of weeks, but they had a really good crowd come out. They estimated around 1,000 people or so through the day. Did a really good fundraiser for homeless vets coming back from abroad, that kind of thing. And just really, really good press for it, number one. And number two, it raised a ton of money. I don't know the exact amount, but I know their target goal was $10,000, and as far as I understood it, they had exceeded their target goal. So that was really great. My band and I donated the time for our show, and fortunately we got to headline it, so it was really cool. Really good exposure for us, and it was really great. You know, good karma is the kind of thing you do. It's just good karma because, frankly, our vets are people that deserve to have a home. You know, they're defending our country, our homes, And then, you know, somebody gets in a bad spot and they end up homeless. That's something that touched my heart, and it's the kind of thing I like to donate my time to.
Very good stuff, man. Good music, good cause, Vet Rock Show in Atlanta. I'm glad it went well for you. And, you know, hopefully, you know, end up doing more good things like that as time moves on. Now, as you know, we've talked about, and you know, even on the last time you were on the show, you are from Green Bay. We talked about your Packers winning the Super Bowl last year, heading into the new regular season. Very heavy favorites. You got to be happy about that, right? Heading in, it could be the first time repeat since the Cowboys, really.
Yeah, no, I'll tell you what, I'm ready for it. You know, back in the, what was it, 90, whatever it was, we should have done it twice in a row, and we didn't. I think it's going to happen this time. I think Aaron Rodgers is as solid as a rock, and the defense is even uglier. So at the end of that day, I think hopefully we end up with another big trophy with Mr. Lambeau's name on it. Be great, yeah.
Yeah, I know they're a heavy favorite, and Rodgers is just that. He is solid, and that defense anchored by, you know, Clay Matthews, his father played for my Cleveland Browns for a long time, and Ohio State Buckeye A.J. Hawk. He doesn't do anything special, but he just tackles people. You know, which, you know, is really important. You know, everyone always says, oh, he's just not real flashy, you know? And I'm like, well, he averages 100 tackles a year. So I would say that's, you know, that's getting the job done. So so we'll see how your Packers do now. What's that, man? I'm
sorry. I'd love to have that job to crush people.
Yeah,
that's
right.
The job
yeah, exactly.
I want.
Yeah, just line up here, knock that guy over as many times as possible, you know? Also, you know, your Brewers, I know you always, you know, don't get too hyped about it because you said as a kid, you know, the Brewers would always choke, and here they are with a big lead in the division heading into the playoffs. Hey, they got good pitching and good batting. You know, kind of a shock, really. You know, what do you feel about the Brewers? Think they can make a run at it?
I think they're going to have to keep their pitching healthy to get through it, but I think they go deep into the playoffs if they do. You know, I think what's kind of so funny is I come up on the Brewers milking cows for my uncle. You know, we would listen to the Brewers radio station in the barn while we were raising dairy cattle up in northern Wisconsin. And I loved that, but, man, the closest we ever got was what, the 80s run that we made. And then every year it's always, man, almost in the playoffs, not quite. So, yeah, I'm juiced this year. It's kind of cool. I got family that do an entire Brewers outing every year. So we're definitely behind them.
Yeah, but I think they're gonna shock some people in the playoffs this year. There's no doubt. I don't think anybody thought that they'd be as hot as they've been since the All-Star break, and really have separated themselves from the Cardinals and the Reds and the Pirates, who were all a surprise team. Now, we've talked about, I'm kind of switching gears on you here a little bit, Robert. We've talked about this on the show a lot here. Where, you know, recently, you know, Janie Lane from Warren just passed away due to, you know, alcohol abuse. And then you had the Amy Winehouse story shortly before that. What is your take on, you know, artists and, you know, alcoholism and drug addiction? I mean, especially through the 90s and even present day now, there are so many artists who have passed away due to drugs and alcohol. What's your take on when you hear stories like this?
Well, one second, I got to put my beer down. Hold on. Okay, I'm ready to answer that. Without the joke, all joking aside, you know, it's one of those things that I'm inside the industry, it kind of, sad to say, but a lot of times goes with the industry, but doesn't have to. I've got a really, really good friend right now who's an amazing writer, going through a tough time, just got out of rehab and has made some choices in his life to move ahead of it instead of let it get him, you know. And I've also had friends that have fallen to alcoholism. It happens, and worse, you know, heroin is another one that gets a lot of, you think of Ray Charles, he beat it, you know, but there's other guys that didn't. So, you know, I think what happens is people get into that nighttime lifestyle, they get into that party lifestyle, and then they try it a little bit, they get into that kind of creative, high-flying thing that goes on, and then what happens is they start to think that without it, they can't have the mojo. They don't have the creativity without it, or they don't have the heart, all that stuff. And they've got to get to a spot where they can beat it, or it'll consume them. And that's what you see happening with those couple of people you just mentioned.
Yeah, very sad stories, and very well put, Robert. Now, I wanted to kind of throw a couple names out in music to you, and you just kind of, you know, shoot off what you think when I mention these names to you, artists in music today. Phil Vassar, I know a guy. What's that?
I said, all right, Mr. Freud. On your couch.
Phil, like it. Yeah, no, hey, come on to the unsigned couch, Robert. Have a seat, man. Hey, what do you think, Phil Vassar? I know you've worked with him, and think highly of him. When you think Phil Vassar, what comes to mind?
Oh man, I think talent. Yeah, Phil Vassar is probably one of the best songwriters of his generation in country music. And the funny thing is a lot of the 80s rock, 90s rock that you heard on the radio, he wrote as well. He wrote so well, so long, so much that it became a solo artist career for himself. I'm real, always amazed and impressed with him.
Very cool. Billy Joel, I know an artist you really enjoy.
Oh, man, Billy Joel. Well, you know what I like about him is he's one of those guys that span decades. That's what I think is cool about him. He's got, I guess the word for him is staying power.
Right on. And I'll give you one more here. Bret Michaels from Poison.
Crazy. I'm just teasing. That guy's got, that guy's a handful. Another really talented person. Total handful. Got to think back up for him a couple of times back in the day. Sick, blah, blah, blah. People need to fill in kind of thing. But really, really big personality to go with, a really big voice. So I think he's an amazingly talented singer. Don't get me wrong. The guy's got pipes.
Right on. Think he should do another VH1 Rock of Love? I'd say not, but yeah.
I'm going to personally skip that one, but thanks for I have now become unrelatable to America. Good job.
drink the fifth and plead it. So all right. Hey, I know you're working on a new album. You know, gosh, you know, you're the hardest working man in country music that I know of. You know, you released an album less than 30 days ago, and here you are working on a second album. You know, I know, you know, you even, you know, did a couple little things on the first time we were on the show, you know, just kind of toying around with it. How's that process for you now in such a short time frame, finally getting the first album done and then jumping right into the second one? I mean, is there a, you know, a different process or a different mindset going in the second time around?
Well, you know, I've learned a lot. The first one made a number of mistakes that we were able to overcome so that the listener is not going to hear them. The behind-the-scenes things on how I paid for things, how I got things done, timeline, that kind of stuff. But, you know, you live and learn, and what's really cool is Roots of the Mountain is the first one. Climbing That Mountain is going to be next out. You know, I've got a whole series of names planned. If I can get where I want to be, I want to go climbing that mountain and top of the mountain, and we're going to be man on the mountain and fire on the mountain. It's going to be cool. I mean, but, you know, long story short, right now, Downtown is what I'm counting on. You know, it's a great song. There's a number of other great cuts on that album I'm very proud of. If y'all want to hear it, all you need to do is go to Rob Everest, and spell Everest just like the mountain, robeverestmusic.com. And there's some free listens there, and there's also 99-cent downloads, or you can do the whole shot at one time if you like. But the cool thing, I think, that I love about it, and cut me off if I'm talking too long here, Ryan, sorry.
No, you're fine.
But, I love the developmental process. I moved to Nashville a couple years back and thought I knew what I was doing and realized really quickly that I didn't. And I had to grow, and I fortunately have had some good mentors in my life, some people who recognized a little bit of talent and were willing to teach, and I was willing to learn. And so what's cool is I think when you get the next stuff, you're going to be even happier because it's getting better with time, and my writing is aging and aging well. And I'm really, really proud of what I'm doing. The people I work with in publishing that listen to my songs and tell me if they're worth cutting or not keep saying, wow, that's really great. Keep going in that direction. So I'm really proud of what I got right now. And I'm really grateful to all you listeners out there. I'm talking right to you now. Everybody who's bought a copy, I appreciate you so much. You know, artist support is tough nowadays. If you don't buy that copy and you pirate it, the hard part is we don't get paid. And most of us at my level aren't making that much money. So I really appreciate all of you who have invested in me like that. Who have supported me, and I really look forward to getting you some new music real soon here, too. It's going to be even better.
Well said, Robert. Hey, man, we love having you on the show. You're a good guy. You have great music, good songwriting. You know, you're humble. And we'd love to have you on anytime. Anytime you want to come on and you know, talk Packers, sports, anything you want, man. If you got a show that's coming up, you know, feel free, pass it to me, man. We'll plug it on the show anytime you need, man. We really appreciate you doing the show for a second time.
I love you guys. You know, I've listened in a few times. You guys do a great show. You know, there's a lot of hacks out there that don't sound great doing internet shows, and I've done some of them. But you guys do it. You're very professional. You guys do a great job. I'm real proud of you. I've listened to a handful of your shows, and I take you out on the road with me. I've done a little podcasting with you guys. So you guys keep it up. I'll keep listening.
We'll do. Everybody, that is Rob Everest. Definitely check out his new album, Roots of the Mountain, and the single Downtown on his website. Robert, thanks for always for stopping in, man. Appreciate it.
Anytime, guys. Have a good day.
Take care, man. Have a good one. Rob Everest here on Unsigned. Very good stuff. Got to hear the new single, Downtown. Again, definitely worth checking out. RobEverestMusic.com. Definitely take a look. If you like what you heard tonight, you won't be disappointed when you get the album. Now, moving on to Unsigned, we got a bunch more things to cover, and I'm going to jump right into it. We're going to go Major League Baseball recap. We'll jump right into the American League East, as we always do. And this is a seesaw battle back and forth of the New York Yankees and the Boston Red Sox. The Yankees, who have won 7 out of their last 10, kind of caught fire, now have a one-game lead over the Boston Red Sox. Again, whoever wins this division, you know, whoever comes in second place is going to be the wild card. So, I mean, you look at the Yankees-Red Sox, there's not a lot of mystery, as we've said many times, in the American League East. Now, look at the American League Central. This past weekend really separated some teams. And by separation, I mean the Detroit Tigers now have a 5.5-game lead and almost a stranglehold on the division at this point, winning 7 out of their last 10, sweeping the Cleveland Indians through the weekend, who have lost 4 straight until winning today to the Mariners in their for one of their doubleheader games, and now are actually in a tie with the Chicago White Sox, 5.5 games out. It doesn't look like the Indians are going to make a run at this point, you know, unless they get really hot here, but the Tigers with Justin Verlander winning his 19th game last night will be the first pitcher to win 20 games in the season. The Tigers look to have that division sewn up, at least at this point. Still, you know, again, over 30-some games of baseball to go. I just don't think that the Indians or the White Sox are going to have enough in the tank to catch the Tigers at this point. 5.5 game gap is a lot of ground to cover. You look at the American League West. No surprise here. The Texas Rangers, again, winning 7 out of their last 10. Now have a 4.5 game lead over the Los Angeles Angels. Angels have done really well this year with what they have. Great pitching. Nice young ball club of the Rangers. You know, returning American League champs. They're going to be a tough out when playoff time comes. No doubt about it. Now we move on to the National League. The Philadelphia Phillies, 82 games they've won already. 6.5 game lead on that division. They've won 6 out of their last 10. The Braves have been hot, winning 7 out of their last 10. Still 6.5 games back. I don't see the Braves catching the Phillies at all. Cliff Lee has been, as advertised, been lights out. He had another stellar performance last night, pitching over 7 innings. The Phillies are the real deal. Now you move to the Central in the National League, and this is, you know, what a couple weeks ago was one of the tightest races in baseball, a 4-team race, has turned into the complete opposite of that. As we talked about with Rob Everest, his Milwaukee Brewers have a 9-game lead on the division. They've won 8 of their last 10, and the Cardinals, Reds, and Pirates are, they're sinking ships at this point, especially the Reds and the Pirates. They are, you know, 13 games back, 15.5 games back, so Brewers are going to the playoffs. We're looking at that. Now we look at the NL West. This is a very interesting race because of the defending champion, San Francisco Giants. The injuries are piling up. They can't hit. They can't swing the bat. And fortunate for them, the Arizona Diamondbacks, who have lost 6 in a row, have not been hitting the ball either. And they still have a 1-game lead on the division. So it doesn't look good for the Giants. There's still a lot of baseball to go. They are within striking distance. They, you know, right there. I mean, the Diamondbacks lose 6 straight, and they're still a game out. So that tells you, you know, how close this division is. And I don't, judging from the Arizona Diamondbacks, I don't think they're going to, you know, not swing the bat for another 6 games in a row. I just don't see that happening. This team is going to catch fire again. And I think, in my opinion, they end up winning this division, and the Giants don't even make the playoffs because the Braves are going to be the wild card in baseball. That's just how I see it as it's playing out right now. That's been your Major League Baseball recap tonight. This is Ryan on Unsigned. Thanks for hanging out with me. Now, I've been trying to do a feel-good story every week, and here's a really good feel-good story. It just happens to come from the Cleveland Indians. Infielder Jack Hanahan, he's about the 25th man on the roster for the Cleveland Indians, and they treat him like a first-string person, like a brother. Now, Hanahan needed assistance earlier this month when the Cleveland Indians were in Boston. His wife was to give birth to their premature son. Now, so Hanahan was at bat in the game. Speed, his agent, booked the first flight out at Logan's Airport in Boston back to Cleveland, knowing he would likely be late anyway. His next step was calling about private planes. There were some available, but they cost $35,000. Now, even though Hanahan has a contract of $500,000, $35,000 is still about 7% of his annual salary. That's a lot of money to gamble on what would be, you know, a risk of not even making it in time to see the birth of his son, and just a lot of money to come up with at one time, even if you do make $500,000 a year. So Justin Masterson, pitcher of the Indians, came over and asked Hanahan what was happening, and he had a thought, and he wasn't taking no for an answer. And the conversation went like this. "Book it," Masterson told Hanahan. He said, "I can't. It costs too much," Hanahan replied. "Book it," Masterson said. Then Masterson passed a hat around the clubhouse. Teammates in the Cleveland Indians and coaches contributed brought together the $35,000 so Hanahan can take a private jet back to Cleveland, and he was able to arrive at the hospital 15 minutes before his wife gave birth to their premature baby boy, and the baby is doing fine, by the way. It's a great story. You talk about camaraderie in a locker room, in a dugout. That is exactly what you want to see from a young ball club, you know, all the way down the line. Everyone going, you know what, let's get this guy. That's the right thing to do. Very good story. Wish we heard more of these in sports when we try to cover as many as we can, but I thought that was a very touching story that he made it back to Cleveland on a private jet paid for by his teammates from Boston to Cleveland to see the birth of his baby boy. I thought that was very, very important to bring up. Very good story for sports in general. That concludes our Major League Baseball stories tonight. Now, we got some NBA side stories, and it has nothing to do with the lockout. That's going on, and the padlock will remain on that for quite some time, I have no doubt. Oklahoma City Thunder star Kevin Durant is closing in Monday on a major movie deal with Warner Brothers. The Oklahomian reported and is yet to be named project is in production for mid-September, aimed by Durant's expected availability because of the NBA lockout. Now, the feature-length movie, which is said to have a hoops subplot, will be filmed in either Oklahoma or Baton Rouge, Louisiana. Durant has performed starring roles this summer already on basketball courts. He scored 66 points in New York's famed Rucker Park earlier this month, and he added 44 points last Saturday in a matchup at Washington Goodman League and the Los Angeles Drew League. So, Kevin Durant is going to follow hopefully the movie's as good as Shazam with Shaquille O'Neal. That's all I can say. You know, because Shazam is a classic. I'm surprised no one, you know, they may remake all these movies. I'm surprised nobody has remade Shazam.
"Hey, this is Shaquille O'Neal. You're making fun of my movie, Shazam. I don't think that's cool. Shazam, it was a classic."
Also, another story in the NBA. Now, this story here, you just can't make this stuff up. You really can't. This is a good one. Police said Monday that a man claiming he was beaten with pool cues outside an Oregon home of Memphis Grizzlies star Zach Randolph, who was invited by the basketball star to sell marijuana at his mansion. James Reuben Beasley told police he was encouraged to sell marijuana to anyone interested among the 20 or so people partying at Randolph's house late Friday night in Portland. It's about 50 miles south of Portland, excuse me. Now, Beasley claimed that he met Randolph earlier in the evening about a charter cruise on the Wilmette River in Oregon, and was invited to the after party at the NBA player's $1.47 million mansion. But approximately 4 a.m. local time that Saturday, the party atmosphere turned ugly after Beasley was allegedly came under attack. Mr. Beasley said 4 to 7 people jumped him and beat him bloody with pool cues, said Sheriff Spokesman Sergeant James Rhodes. Beasley went to a local hospital for treatment and did not report the crime until Saturday around 2 p.m. Probably had to rest up from all that pot selling, pot dealing, you know, and getting beat with pool cues, which is hilarious. I mean, it's funny and it's not funny all at the same time. Now, Randolph, who's 30 years old, was at the home at the time of the incident, and when the search warrant was served, police said he had not spoken to deputies on advice from his attorney. And according to the Oregon papers, Beasley told investigators Randolph was not involved in the attack. Come to find out, they did find the pool cues there, but no marijuana was found on the premises. I wonder what really happened to the marijuana. I mean, did they bring in a special person to get rid of the marijuana? Did they bring in Samaki Walker as a possible sting operation to swoop in and eat the marijuana? Or did he make up a batch of his Samaki Walker pot brownies or something? I wonder how that basically came to. I mean, you know, were the people beating him with pool cues going, 8-ball, corner pocket? I mean, jeez. Pot dealer, did the paper read, pot dealer gets beat with pool cues? You know, I mean, you can't make these stories up. You just can't. I mean, unbelievable. Interesting to see what's going to happen with this story. Zach Randolph obviously keeping tight lip as well as he probably should. His attorney's like, what are you doing, man? Come on. You know, you make millions. You don't need some dude selling some random person you don't know, you know, selling marijuana to your house guest. NBA players, much like the NFL players, just have too much time on their hands when the lockout season's on. Unbelievable. Moving on tonight here, we're going to take a step. We're going to go off the path. This is where, you know, we talk about non-sports related stories. We got a bunch of stuff to cover today under this section of the show, Off the Path. And we'll lead off tonight with Nick Ashford. He's one half of the legendary Motown songwriting team Ashford & Simpson, who penned such classics as Ain't No Mountain High Enough, I'm Every Woman, and Ain't Nothing Like the Real Thing. He died from cancer at New York Hospital August 22nd. He was 70 years old. Ashford met Valerie Simpson at a New York church in 1964 and quickly began writing songs together. They scored their first big hit in 1966 when Ray Charles recorded their track Let's Go Get Stoned, and it brought them a number one on the R&B chart. They began writing for Motown that same year and hit it big in 1967 with Ain't No Mountain High Enough. The song was originally recorded by Marvin Gaye, but Diana Ross recorded it in 1970, making it her first solo number one single to hit the top 100. Also, another songwriter passing away, Jerry Lieberman, one of the most important songwriters in rock and roll history, whose 60-year partnership with Mike Stoller, producer of Stand By Me, Hound Dog, Jailhouse Rock, Young Blood on Broadway, and Yakety Yak, and countless other rock and roll classics, has died due to cardiopulmonary failure. He was 78 years old. Now, in 1956, his career went to a high level when Elvis Presley took the song Hound Dog, which was wrote for Big Mama Thornton 4 years early, and turned it into a gigantic hit. Lieberman was extremely irritated by the single because Presley had changed the original lyrics. To this day, I have no idea what the rabbit business is about, he said in 2009. The song is not about a dog. It's about a man and a freeloading gigolo. Elvis' version made no sense to me. And even more irritating is that I wrote the song and he changed the lyrics. And, of course, I guess the fact that it sold over 7 million copies kind of takes the sting off of it. Now, Lieberman, now, not all of his songs were innocent, as they seemed. The song Pure and Simple, Poison Ivy, which was done by 1959 by the Coasters, is a metaphor for sexually transmitted diseases, or as he says, the clap. Hardly a topic for a song in the top 10 in the spring of 1959, Lieberman said in 2009. But the more we wrote, the less we understood why the public bought what they bought. Isn't that the truth? That still holds true today. So music lost two very essential songwriters in a very short period of time. Nick Ashford and the Motown area, and Jerry Lieberman, really in the rock and roll history era and the Elvis era. So two songwriters from that era passing away in the same week. Very sad. Brighter news here on Off the Path tonight. I don't know if it's probably not bright for Little Wayne, who's recovering from injuries sustained while skateboarding in a St. Louis park yesterday. The rapper who was in town doing a concert at the Verizon Amphitheater was treated for a gash on his head at DePaul Health Center emergency room. He tweeted, "The Lou was good, but I busted my head at the skate park. 9 stitches, gnarly gash over my left eye. Love the people." And this is what he tweeted earlier. Now, Lil Wayne, despite his injury, is scheduled to appear at the MTV Video Music Awards this Sunday. Immediately after the show, the rapper's new album, The Charter 4, will be available in all digital stores and brick-and-mortar shops as well. So Lil Wayne getting a little bump on the head there, but hey, I'm sure everything's fine. You know, doing a little skateboarding, out with the public, having some fun. Nothing wrong with that. The Smashing Pumpkins. Yes. I just said the Smashing Pumpkins will road test their new material of their next album, Oceanica, which will actually be out hopefully very soon. They'll hit on the tour this October. The band says they promise to play a good mix of hits and deep cuts along with fresh new songs. It'll be the band's first album since 2007. In the meantime, the band will begin the first stages of an ambitious reissue plan. The deluxe repackaged editions of their early classics, Gish and Siamese Dream, are due out later this year. The fall tour will kick off October 5th in L.A. and will finish up in Philadelphia October the 22nd. Now, we talked about the Red Hot Chili Peppers a couple weeks ago, and they're in the news again. The Red Hot Chili Peppers, their new album, as you know, is going to be released August the 30th. And to celebrate, the band will be live on the Fuse Network at the legendary Roxy Theater at 9 p.m., on the Fuse Network, playing songs from their new album titled I'm With You, and I'm sure they'll be playing some of their classics as well. Definitely worth checking out. Red Hot Chili Peppers, August 30th, the same day the new album comes out, will be live at the Roxy Theater on TV. That's a can't miss. If you're a music fan, you're a Chili Peppers fan, that's a can't miss right there. Now, we have a clip here of Linda Perry, and we'll get to that in a second. Now, Linda Perry, for those of you who do not know, is a legendary Four Non Blondes rocker turned songwriter. She's wrote songs for Pink, Christina Aguilera, Gwen Stefani, and countless other young pop stars. And she's picking the worst of the worst of modern-day music to make fun of. And she's picking on Katy Perry, who in her mind is the worst offender. Go ahead and check this clip out here.
Well, the music industry has definitely changed over the last 20 years. And would you say for the better, for the worse?
It's just different, different. It's very different. And, like, you listen to the Adele record. I mean, I'm not a huge fan of Adele, but that's a solid record.
And it's like the number one record in the country.
A solid record, and it's selling. Mm-hmm. Okay? So that means people are still buying records. Yeah. It's the crappy, like, who wants a fucking Katy Perry record? I'm sorry. You know, you're going to get the two songs that are probably the hits that are good, but the rest of the album is going to be crap. It is. It's going to sound like shit, and who cares about buying that record? So people download the single, and then that's it.
So there'll be no covers of Teenage Dream tonight, is what you're saying?
No, there will not be. And not saying that Katy is bad. Yeah. I mean, she's great for what she does, but she's not reinventing the wheel. She's not giving substance. Mm-hmm. She's just giving, you know, microwave popcorn for you to feast on right at this moment. Mm-hmm. You know, that's it. And that's what she wants to do, obviously. She's not looking to change the world musically. She's not, you know. So all the power to her and everybody who is like that. I'm not saying it's bad. I'm just saying it's not what I participate in. But that is part of the reason why the music business is in turmoil, so to say.
You gotta like that. Linda Perry really giving it to you straight right there. And a lot of what she's talking about, I agree with wholeheartedly. I mean, I like my Katy Perry with extra butter personally. But I think she's right on there. I think that, you know, some of these artists just, you know, put the single out and that's all you get. It's, you know, it's cookie cutter. It's stamp and go. You know, and that's, you know, kind of where music is heading, unfortunately. And in some aspects, not all music is like that. And she didn't want to come out and say that, you know, Katy Perry sucks, but she did come out and say Katy Perry sucks. So there you have it. Linda Perry, songwriter and also former rocker of the band Four Non Blondes. Now, here's a really interesting story. We don't do a lot of TV stuff here on the show, but I thought this was pretty funny. Who would have thought that a jihad death threat would have made David Letterman funny again? Anybody? No? Well, apparently Al Jazeera TV basically put a death threat out of Dave Letterman while he was on vacation. So Dave Letterman came back the other night with thoughts that went through my mind after hearing about the threat. Number 10, someone wants to silence me. Get in line. Nothing says summer like a death threat. Why is the staff in such a good mood? Save me. Oprah. Should I wear my Kevlar hairpiece? And here I thought nobody watched the show. How can somebody be so angry at a time when Kim Kardashian is so happy? Some people get Emmy nominations. Some people get death threats. This seems like Leno's handiwork. And oh my God, they canceled the George Lopez show? David Letterman getting back into his true original comedy form after receiving a death threat. Very good stuff. Dave Letterman, who knew? Who would have thought that, you know, a jihad would make you funny? Moving on tonight here on Off the Path. This is Ryan here on Unsigned. We're going to our top movies at the box office. We do this every week on the show. We'll start from number 10. We work our way up to the number one spot. Number 10, Crazy Stupid Love at $4.7 million. One Day at $5 million. 30 Minutes or Less at $6.4 million. Final Destination, $7.7 million. Fright Night, $7.7 million. The movie Smurfs, still in the top five, $7.8 million. Conan the Barbarian at $10 million. Spy Kids, All the Time in the World, $11.6 million. Rise of the Planet of the Apes, a great movie, unsigned movie right there. If you're looking for a movie, that's the one to go see, $16.1 million. And the movie The Help, which is getting very good reviews, at $20 million. Now, with the summer movie frenzy really coming to a close, there are still some a few good movies out there worth taking a look at, including Rise of the Planet of the Apes, other movies that are coming out here in the next couple weeks, the movie Apollo 18, which looks like a really good sci-fi thriller. Sometimes sci-fi thrillers look good or not. This one seems to be pretty genuine. It looks very solid. And also the movie Contagion, which stars Matt Damon, Lawrence Fishburne, Jude Law, Gwyneth Paltrow, and Kate Winslet. That looks to be a very solid film coming out in the second week of September. Definitely worth taking a look at. I look to take a look at that movie as well and do an interview on the review of the show for you as well. That concludes our section of Off the Path tonight here on Unsigned. And now we're going to move into the NCAA football. Dun, 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 dun. Well, and if you may not have heard, you maybe have heard about the University of Miami. All I'm going to say is this. It's all about the U, baby. Nevin Shapiro, a former Miami booster who is serving a 20-year prison sentence for masterminding a $930 million Ponzi scheme, told Yahoo Sports last week that he provided impermissible benefits to 72 of the university's football players and other athletes from the year of 2002 to the year 2010. Get this. The list is huge here, so bear with me. Shapiro gave money, cars, yachts, yacht trips, jewelry, televisions, other gifts, and lists of players include Vince Wilfork, John Beeson, Antron Roll, Devin Hester, Willis McGahee, Kellen Winslow, the late Sean Taylor also claimed he paid for nightclub outings, sex parties, restaurants, restaurant meals. And in one case, he paid for an abortion for a woman who was impregnated by a player. One former Miami player said, who was running back Tyrone Moss, told Yahoo Sports he accepted $1,000 from Shapiro around the time he was entering college. Shapiro said, hell yeah, I recruited lots of kids from Miami, Shapiro told Yahoo Sports. With access to, you know, nightclubs and strip joints, my house, my boat, we're talking about high school football players. Not anybody can get into clubs and strip joints. Who's going to pay for it? I make it happen. That was me, Nevin Shapiro. Now, this is the tip of the iceberg for an offseason for the NCAA football. Now, you have football programs, Southern California, Ohio State, Auburn, Oregon, Michigan, North Carolina, Georgia Tech, LSU, Florida State International now having problems. Alabama rumored to be under investigation by the NCAA. When Shapiro was sentenced by U.S. attorney officials, he said he used investment funds to make payments to dozens of student athletes who were attending local universities in Miami, at the University of Miami, in which Shapiro made significant donations, cash donations up to $10,000 in gifts, again, such as jewelry and entertainment to nightclubs and restaurants in Miami Beach. As a result of his 10-year gift to the university, get this, this is a good one, the Student Athletic Lounge is named Shapiro. Their athletic building is named Shapiro. It's all about the U, baby. Now this, I mean, you look at this, you're talking abortion, prostitution, for 18 and 19-year-old kids, illegal consumption of alcohol, paying bounties. There's a part in the article where he's talking about paying bounties for players for reaching certain stats and numbers in games. Paying bounties for players for injuring other players on other teams. If this isn't a cry for death penalty of a program, I don't know what is. Now, is the U going to get the death penalty? I don't know how they cannot avoid it. I mean, the writing is on the wall. There's photographs. This guy has receipts. He's got everything. The statute of limitation is 4 years in the NCAA. Now, unless they can be linked together. And this links it together from 2002 to 2010. This makes the Ohio State tattoo scandal look as weak as you possibly could have a sports scandal. It really, really does. Now, back in April, you know, after the Ohio State issue had really come full-blown, you know, and the NCAA, I even said the NCAA needs to make a change. And most everybody wanted the Buckeyes to hang and hang hard. And again, I'll say it, that tattoo scandal at Ohio State is weak and meager compared to what's going on at the U, baby. It's all about the U. Are you kidding me? I mean, I don't know how this program can avoid or justify not having the death penalty. I mean, everyone was like, oh, Ohio State should get this, Ohio State should get that. And, you know, rightfully so, they were in the wrong. I agree, they broke the rules. But you're talking illegal activity, not just, you know, receiving money and benefits, which is legal for NCAA. You're talking about prostitution and abortion and getting kids into strip bars who are not old enough to do that. Now, granted, you know, I think everybody to a certain extent in their youth, you know, maybe partied a little bit with substances they probably shouldn't have. But this is blatant disregard. And now the university obviously is going to say they don't know anything about it. Really? You don't know anything about it? Shapiro's cash donations and your sports facility is named Shapiro? You don't know anything about it, though. Coaches have been implemented in the – there are pictures with players and coaches on his $2 million yacht out in South Beach. I'm getting fired up about this. This ticks me off. And now all these people and the talking heads on Sports Illustrated and ESPN are going on and on and on and on and on about, oh, now everything needs to change. Everything needs to change. This Miami thing is a cry. This is a cry for help that we need to change a system. Does the system need change? Yes. Is this the reason? No, this is not the reason. The NCAA doesn't need change for nightclubs and sex parties and restaurant meals. It doesn't need change for bounties on players for doing certain things, you know, and hanging out at, you know, at this some rich person's yacht or at their mansion. That's not what this program needs change for. It needs change for a different reason. It's easy to sit back and say it just needs change. Well, I'll tell you what, the NCAA did make some changes. Here's a change for you. They're now going to allow programs to provide fruit, nuts, and bagels. And now with those fruit, nuts, and bagels, they're allowed to have spreads like peanut butter and jelly and sour cream and cheese. And student-athletes can have them at any time. This is going to take effect August 1st, 2012. Well, thank you, NCAA, for taking a hard stance on the real hard issues affecting college sports today. Because you know what? Not reporting cream cheese on your bagel is a major violation in the NCAA. The fact that that is actually a real story and I did not make that up is ludicrous. Unbelievable. That is real. Bagels. I mean, you definitely don't want players getting into the bagel business. They start opening up bagel shops, that's all going downhill, especially if the kids from the U, you know? And who knows what they'll be doing in that bagel shop. It's all about the U, man. I think, you know what, it's easy to sit back and say the system needs change. I've said it myself. People, you know, on local radio, on ESPN, on, you know, the list goes on and on. People will talk about this system needs change. There's no doubt about that it needs tweaked, changed. But the question is, how do you change it and maintain a fair system for all programs involved? On the other side, you have people saying that these players should be paid. Okay, and I can appreciate that. But again, these universities are making millions of dollars off these players. Granted, yes. But since when is getting a four-year education to a Division I school not worth anything? The average cost for a school, Division I college, is between $35,000 to $48,000 a year with a 6% increase annually per U.S. News Weekly. So let's say it's $40,000 a year, and let's not even include the 6% interest. You're talking $160,000 for a four-year degree at no cost to you to play a sport in college. I mean, if last I checked, that's a huge step up above what most people get. That's a free four-year education. Now, should they have other amenities, other things because they're athletes? I don't know. You can make a case for both. You really could. I understand both sides of this. I really, really understand both sides. And I understand that the system does need change. Hell, I've said it on this show again many a times. How do you maintain the amateur status of the NCAA? The Urban Dictionary says the word amateur means sloppy, not professional looking. Or how about everyone cheats in the NCAA rulebook? Hell, shit, that looks amateur, man, but somehow he managed to get a good grade somehow. I'll leave it up to you to make the call on the NCAA. I think it needs change. The rules are too many and then are randomly enforced. And I think with anyone and everyone can agree in a system like that, no matter what side of the NCAA rulebook you stand on, it is time for a change for college football. And the University of Miami is going to get a heavy hand from the NCAA. It's all about the U and NCAA. What a mess this offseason has been. And the season is getting ready to start. We'll do a NCAA football preview for you next week on the show. But just a heads up, I mean, you know, unbelievable mess University of Miami and all the other programs that I listed earlier are in. And I'm sure there are more to come. Moving on tonight here on Unsigned, my name is Ryan. Thanks for hanging out with me. I appreciate it. And I said a couple weeks ago, we're going to do an NFL preview, and it's time. We're 2 weeks into the preseason. Kickoff is a couple weeks away. We start the regular season. I'm going to break down every single division, every single team for you. We're going to start off in the AFC East. Now, I think the New England Patriots are going to win the AFC East. I'm not going out on a limb there by any means. And we will again... We're going to have one of the best records of the NFL. I think they're going to end up 13-3. The defense is much improved, and as steady as it goes, Tom Brady and Bill Belichick's scheme will prove to be too much. Now, I also have the New York Jets in this division, who have been the two straight AFC championship games, and they're going to look and make a push to the Super Bowl this year. They add Derek Mason. They pick up Plaxico Burress. They retain Santonio Holmes. Now, I have concerns about their running game. LaDainian Tomlinson is, you know, obviously on the back end of his Hall of Fame career. Sean Green has not necessarily shown he can handle the workload that it takes to be an NFL running back full-time. Now, he's going to have to split carries. Can LT do what he did last year for that team? It remains to be seen. And also, really what their downfall was last year, and I think it's going to be their Achilles heel this year, is the lack of pass rush they have on their front four on their defense. With all that being said, I think they're going to be 11-5 and be a very solid wild card team in the playoffs. The Buffalo Bills, much improved team. I think they're going to flirt with 500 and be 7-9. The Miami Dolphins can play defense. There's no doubt about it. They have some very skilled players on that side of the ball. They have some pretty decent wideouts. They have major questions at quarterback, and I think the running back situation is going to be a hard road to haul for Miami this year with a 6-10 record. Moving on to the AFC North. This is a tough one to call, but I'm going to go with the Baltimore Ravens. You had the Baltimore Ravens and the AFC champion Pittsburgh Steelers, who are always, you know, in for an old-fashioned fist fight. I think this year, like I said, the Ravens are – I think their defense is finally going to start showing its age this year. I think Cool Joe Flacco and the Ravens' offense will be what actually carries the load this year with Ray Rice and company. Antoine Bolden, I think they win the AFC North 11-5 record. Now, the Steelers, again, the returning AFC champions – horrible loss. Yeah, the Steelers lost the Super Bowl. It makes me happy. I'm a Browns fan. But anyway, they have protection issues on the offensive line like they did last year. I think that's going to be a reoccurring theme. I look for them, you know, to run the ball, do play action, and basically be the Steelers and be the blitzkrieg defense that you have come to know from the Pittsburgh Steelers. The formula is still going to remain the same. Solid defense. They're going to run the ball and do what the Steelers do. They're a dangerous wild card team, though, I think, at 10-6. Now, the Cleveland Browns, my Cleveland Browns, I think they look pretty sharp under new coach Pat Shurmur. I think they're taking a step in the right direction this year. I think they go 8-8. I think the tough second half of the season will prove to be a big hill for them to climb. But the fan in me thinks that the age of the Ravens and the Steelers could come into play late in the season, and the Browns are a big shocker this season and find themselves in a wild card position. Again, that's the fan in me talking. I really think they're an 8-8 ball club, but the fan in me says they get in the playoffs. Finally, the Bengals. What can you say really about the Bengals other than they are going to play football on Sunday, and it's not going to be very pretty? They're going to end up having one of the worst records in the league. They have a rookie quarterback who is not ready to really be a starting quarterback in the NFL, Andy Dalton. I think he's going to be at some point if he doesn't get shell-shocked this year. It's a very young team on offense. I think they have a suspect defense. Again, very long season in the Queen City. Cincinnati Bengals end up 3-13. Looking at the AFC South, I think this division is wide open more than it has been any time in recent memory. The Colts, Peyton Manning, is he going to start? Is he not going to start? He has the longest current active streak of games played at 209, chasing Brett Favre's record. I think this year, though, is the Houston Texans. I think they finally get over the hump. I think they finish 10-6 and get into the playoffs, and it's not going to be easy. Now, the Jacksonville Jaguars, led by Maurice Jones-Drew, again, we're going to make a run at it, but I think their lack of options at wide receiver, the loss of Mike Sims-Walker to St. Louis, is going to be tough to overcome. But I think they have a decent season at 9-7. Now, the Colts, I'm going to say it, the Colts are not going to make the playoffs. No Peyton Manning. Now, he's going to play, but I think even losing Peyton Manning for a couple games this season, then coming off a neck injury, I think it's going to take a few games for him to get in the groove. I look for them to finish strong, but I think it's going to be a disappointing season, 8-8. And the Colts are out of the playoff picture. The Tennessee Titans, post Jeff Fisher era, will start. And still no deal for Chris Johnson, the running back who they desperately need. They have Matt Hasselbeck at the helm at quarterback. I have my doubts that Matt Hasselbeck's body will be able to hold up for a full season, thus putting rookie Jake Locker, who has looked anything but NFL ready in the preseason, will put him under center, which is not good for the Tennessee Titans. At the end of this year, they will have more questions than answers about this team. They're going to be 5-11. It's going to be a long season here in Nashville for those Tennessee Titans, unfortunately. AFC West, the Wild. Last year, the Raiders, Chiefs, and Chargers all had interesting seasons. But this year, I think the Chargers, led by Phillip Rivers, who I think, in my opinion, is going to be in the MVP race. And I think they're going to rumble through the league. Yeah, Vincent Jackson back for a full season. The defense is stout. They have serious speed and ability to create turnovers. This is a 12-4 season for the Bolts. I think their losses are going to come from their East Coast trips. Most teams who have to travel east from the West Coast a couple times, it usually doesn't equate to a lot of wins, and I think that's where some of their losses are going to go in a 12-4 season. The Chargers are a very dangerous team led by Phillip Rivers, and he has his ace, Vincent Jackson, at the helm. And also, don't forget about Malcolm Floyd, who was also a very good wide receiver for that ball club, and a very, very dynamic group in the backfield as well. Now, the Chiefs. The Kansas City Chiefs, I think they overachieved last year, and I think losing Charlie Weiss, the offensive coordinator, is going to have them taking a step back. I think they're going to have a good year. They have a solid defense. They have a lot of speed at the corner positions and from the backfield and the wide receiver positions, adding Stephen Breston from the Arizona Cardinals. I think they're on the outside looking in this year, though, at 9-7. Now, the Raiders, who have swept the division last year, I think they also take a step back. I don't see the Raiders sweeping the division this year. They have too much turnover at key positions, and the black hole will be just that. I think you're looking at 9-7 or 8-8 for the Oakland Raiders. Now, they did pick up Terrell Pryor in a supplemental draft Monday. I think this is really a perfect fit for Terrell Pryor. Al Davis has always loved freakish athletes. Terrell Pryor is just that, 6'4", 6'5", runs a 4.4 40, you know, big, strong guy. I think that, you know, under the right tutelage with some of the coaching staff they have there, if they can keep Jackson and that coaching staff there, I think Pryor has the ability in maybe 2 years to be a starting quarterback, and I think he will get a legitimate shot in Oakland with Al Davis. And I think they also took him because Al Davis has a history dating back to the 70s of taking quarterbacks and turning them in and putting them in other positions. Terrell Pryor as a wide receiver, most definitely. I could definitely see that. And then you have the Denver Broncos, rounding out the AFC West. I think they're going to see some improvements on this team. First-year coach John Fox, but I don't think it's going to be enough, and I don't think you're going to see Tim Tebow under center. I think at best they go 7-9. Let's move to the NFC. NFC preview, we'll start with the NFC East. This is usually always really the most entertaining division because you have the Cowboys, Giants, and Eagles. When the lockout ended, the Eagles landed the huge names in free agency. The team also, heck, even without the free agents they added this offseason, they were a playoff contender under coach Andy Reid and quarterback Michael Vick. They had two shutdown corners, a few defensive linemen, a solid right tackle, and more weapons for a very dangerous Michael Vick, even though they did not have a good showing this past weekend in preseason. I think the Eagles will win the division. I don't think it's going to be easy. I think they end up 11-5. The Cowboys, with a healthy Tony Romo and with Rob Ryan running the defense in Dallas for Big D, I think they're going to have a much better showing than they did last year. I think Felix Jones at running back is going to become a breakout star this year for the Dallas Cowboys. I think they're on a 10-6 record and end up in a wild card spot. The Giants, they had a good showing last night at Monday Night Football. Their starting cornerback was lost for the season. They have a depleted secondary. They have question marks at wide receiver, losing Steve Smith to the Eagles. The Giants, I think, will miss the playoffs once again, finishing 8-8. And you'll see Tom Coughlin at the end of the year be replaced with somebody else. And the Washington Redskins, I think they're I'm giving them the benefit of the doubt here, but I think they're in the Andrew Luck lottery ball game for the NFL draft next year. A team... Yeah, this is going to be a very, very long season. They have issues at starting quarterback. And John Beck and Rex Grossman are your two best options at quarterback. You have issues. Now, I think Tim Hightower and the Mike Shanahan scheme, who they acquired from the Arizona Cardinals this year, is going to have a huge season. I think he's going to be – he's going to have a great breakout season. I think it's going to be a struggle. Maybe they get the 6-10. That's giving them the benefit of the doubt because of what they have on the defensive side of the ball. I think it'll keep them in ball games. But I really think Washington Redskins are in for a long season. Now let's go to the NFC South. I think this is probably the most interesting and intriguing division in the NFC. A lot of solid teams here. And again, some of the best teams in the NFC as a whole. And it's going to be a very fun race to watch. But I think the Atlanta Falcons, who added more weapons for Matt Ryan, and they also add Ray Edwards on the defensive line. It should give the Falcons and owner Arthur Blank a Super Bowl trip. That's right. I made the call there. As much as they would like it, I really think the Falcons can make the Super Bowl this year. If they get home field advantage at 13-3, which I think their record will be, I see no reason why they shouldn't. Now, also, you have the Tampa Bay Buccaneers and the Saints who are going to battle for that wild card spot. This is really a toss-up to me. The young Tampa Bay Bucs are hungry, and the Saints want the capture of that Super Bowl glory from a couple seasons ago. I think Tampa Bay will miss out again this year, and the Saints will find the way in at 11-5. But don't count off the young Tampa Bay Bucs. I think they're going to have a very solid season, maybe 9-7, 10-6 like they were last year and still on the outside looking in. I think they're a year away. And then you have the Carolina Panthers. Rookie Cam Newton, who's going to get the start, and new coach Ron Rivera. I think they're in for a very, very large learning curve. And if what you saw in the preseason game against the Miami Dolphins is any indication, it's a very, very large learning curve, and it's going to be a very, very long season. Heck, they didn't even cross midfield until close to near halftime with Cam Newton and the starters under center. I think they're in for a long season at 2-14, one of the worst records in the NFL. Looking at the NFC North, you have the returning Green Bay Packers, the champions. I think they're going to win this division going away at 12-4. The Vikings coming off a down year. They have veteran quarterback Donovan McNabb and Adrian Peterson at running back. I think they're going to be in the hunt. But I think an aging defense, the Williams boys, those guys that play a lot of football, I think age is going to catch up with that side of the football for them. It's a very tough division. I think they're going to miss the playoffs again and finish 9-7. Lions and Bears, oh my. Two teams heading into two different directions as far as I'm concerned. The Bears, who were in the NFC title game, I don't think they're going to end up there this year. And there are too many holes on the offensive line. They have lack of consistency and playmakers at the wide receiver positions. I think the Bears will be in hibernation to come January at 8-8. The Lions, I think, are going to make some noises here. I think they're going to be a lot better. I think it depends on if Matthew Stafford, the quarterback from Georgia, can stay healthy. He's had a lot of injuries. If he can stay upright and stay healthy, I think they could possibly get to 500. Maybe a winning season unlikely. I think 7-9 is realistic for the Detroit Lions, who I think, much like the Browns, are a year or two away from being a viable threat. Now, the NFC West. This is the weakest division in football by far. It was last year, and I think this year is going to be wide open again. I think the St. Louis Rams, I'm going to pick them to win the division this year. I think that, you know, I think they're only going to be not 9-7, but I think 9-7 is going to be plenty good enough to win this division. Sam Bradford at quarterback in his second year. You have Steven Jackson at the running back position. You add a couple pieces. You get Mike Sims-Walker. You get Sam Bradford some weapons. They have a very solid defense, anchored by James Laurinaitis from Ohio State in the middle. Heck, I even think 8-8 might be enough to win this division. But I think they'll go 9-7. The Rams get in the playoffs. The Seattle Seahawks, yes, they added a bunch of weapons. They get a new quarterback, Tavares Jackson. He's getting the starting nod, but I think midseason he'll get the hook, much like he did in Minnesota. You'll see Charlie Winehurst finish the year. I think they'll make a run at it, but I don't think 7-9 will do it this year, and that's what they'll be, and they will not be in the playoffs. Arizona Cardinals, they get their guy, Kevin Cobb, but I don't know if it's necessarily going to be enough. Can Chris Beanie Wells stay healthy and carry a full workload? As much as I'd like to see it, I have my doubts given his injury history. I think there's holes on defense. I just don't know if Kevin Cobb is necessarily the answer. I think 7-9, 8-8 at best. Now, the San Francisco 49ers, new coaches, but pretty much the same personnel, even at quarterback, will equal the same results in another losing season. I think they go 6-10. That's being modest. Now, you may not have heard about this, and we'll end our NFL preview there with the 49ers on a side note. The mayor of San Francisco and Oakland and the NFL called to an end active violence at sporting events after two men were shot and wounded following a San Francisco 49ers and Oakland Raiders preseason game. Investigators Sunday looked for suspects and interviewed witnesses to the violence the night before at Candlestick Park after the matchup. Motives for the shooting are unclear. In Saturday's attack, the 24-year-old man who reportedly was wearing a F the Niners t-shirt was shot several times in the stomach. Police said he managed to stumble to the stadium security for help despite his severe injuries. He remains hospitalized in serious conditions as of Sunday. The second victim is a 20-year-old man who was treated for less serious injuries in a separate shooting also after the game. This is ridiculous. This is there's been a lot of stories like this out in the Bay Area, Los Angeles Dodgers, San Francisco Giants opening weekend with a fan being beat. This has got to stop. I mean, and we talked about this on the show when we had Daryl Ryder on. Just because you buy a ticket or at a sporting event does not give you the right to be an idiot. I don't understand the violence of sporting events. These are events that you wish that you could take your family to and your kids to, and by all means you should, because the way the entertainment dollar is today in this economy, you know, it's important to have those moments that you can, you know, even if it's just one small game, you know, out of the season or something to take your family and your friends to, with your kids. You know, at this point, it makes you wonder if you even want to take your kids to a football game. I've been to some football games in Cleveland. The fans are rowdy. There's been some stories of guys doing stupid things. There's no shootings or stabbings or severe beatings. Maybe some of the language is a little foul and you probably shouldn't take kids to, but even still, you would like for people to act right and, you know, be sensible. If you see someone or you suspect someone of, you know, is really causing a ruckus or you think is going to be a threat, at least report it. Let somebody know about it and let the property authorities take handle of it. These kind of stories really tick me off, and best of luck to these two gentlemen that were shot and injured. Hopefully they make a full recovery. Now, the NFL and the mayor of San Francisco and Oakland are talking about, you know, this is a ritual where San Francisco and Oakland play every year for the preseason. They're talking about doing away with it now because of, you know, the in-stadium violence, the out-of-stadium violence. They're already going to ban tailgating for the season there. You know, a few idiots ruin it for the many, and that's, you know, the moral of the story there. It only takes a few idiots to, you know, to ruin it. Really, really ridiculous. This is Ryan, unsigned. Thanks for hanging out with me. We had a big show tonight. Here's a story I'm going to end on with, completely unrelated from football or anything like that. This is a German golfer who lost a bet to a British player in 2005 who spent over $1,600 and traveled 800 miles to the UK to track him down to buy him a beer. Sebastian Steinsen lost a bet for a beer to the British tourist during a vacation to a Spanish island. The Daily Telegraph reported Friday he failed to buy the player he knew only as Patrick, his victory beer at the time. After years of guilt building up, he traveled to the UK and for the opportunity to buy him his beer and own up to his bet. I have traveled 800 miles to find Patrick, and it's worth every penny if I find him. But after 10 days of golf clubs and bars in Patrick's hometown of Portishead, southwest England, Steinsen returned home Wednesday without finding his golfing foe. He said, I just thought the people of the golf courses and the pub would know where he was. I just wanted to pay my debts and buy him a pint. Now that's dedication right there. You know, usually like, hey, didn't you owe me $20 like 5 years ago? And that person will avoid you like crazy. Here's a guy that spends $600 and travels 800 miles to buy a guy a beer. Tip of the cap to Sebastian Steinsen from Germany, who is a political teacher in the country. So hats off to him and for being a stand-up guy and saying, you know what, I'll buy a beer. You won the bet fair and square, even though it took you 5 years to do it. Hey, it's been a good show. I want to thank Rob Everest again for coming on. Always a pleasure to have him on. We covered a lot of NFL stuff, NCAA. Thanks to Mike, founder and producer of Omnis TV, as always, does a wonderful job. Also, check out at Cooker Carolyn on Twitter for information on her cookbook. Hey, Labor Day is right around the corner. Need something for a cookout? Definitely check out at Cooker Carolyn. Over 45 recipes and the cookbook. My name is Ryan, and this is Unsigned. It seems harder to enjoy the finer things in life. Until next time, do so, everybody. Take care.